This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and for the sacrifices they've made. We want to preserve their stories so they're not forgotten, so we don't forget the price of freedom. And along the way, of course, we're educated about what World War II was really like, what some of our nation's greatest moments were like, and maybe we can put some of those ideas into practice today. We're going to visit with 89-year-old Clay Comer of Fresno, California, Army veteran of World War II, a guy who's lived in Fresno his entire life other than World War II. What was it like growing up in Fresno in the 20s and 30s?
It was a great, great town, and Fulton Street was the heart of everything, and the further north we would get, about Shields Avenue, although we did have a streetcar going from downtown area clear out to Pinedale area and the river, and went out to Roding Park in those days, because I rode that streetcar with my aunt. When I would go and stay with her, she'd say, well, let's go downtown, Clay, and she'd take us downtown and always go to the Mickey Mouse Club. So I'm a veteran of the Mickey Mouse Club also, as well as a World War II veteran.
Well, some people are saying the Mickey Mouse Club in Fresno, what's that all about? What can you tell us about that?
They showed at the Warner and the Wilson Theater different cartoons that was made in Hollywood, of course. We had a little axe on the stage of the theater. First, as kind of a warm-up, the guy who emceed it, he was wonderful. He was a Fresno State College student. He came here to go to college and ended up staying here. His name has come to me now. It's Elmer Tushoff. A lot of people of my age group would remember Elmer Tushoff as being the Al Radka of an earlier period of time. He was a musician also, and he played the great big tuba later on in his life, and he would have to set that tuba on a stool next to him, and then he'd sit on the stool next to his tuba, and he'd honk into that thing along with the other band members. And what a character he was, Elmer Tushoff. He was someone, in fact, it was Woody Laughlin one time said, Clay, who do you think should be Mr. Fresno? And I said, well, Elmer Tushoff. And his wife, Tilly, who was also a great patriot of Fresno and always interested in civic affairs.
As we talk about these war stories, I like to give people a glimpse of life before the war, wherever your hometown may be, no matter how big or how small it might be. Fresno was a little smaller there, but so you're saying as a young kid of 12, 13 years old, you would go down to these movie theaters, which are still there. Wilson Theater is Cornerstone Church now. Warner's Theater is still preserved the way it was then. And you would see a stage show and something up on the screen and have this big adventure for the kids?
Yeah, and then they would have ongoing what they call serials, where the cowboy acts would end in a tight situation, and then you had to come back next week to see the conclusion of that great show. It was very entertaining. Although I did live out a little ways from the heart of downtown, I lived out west of downtown on West Olive between Marks and Valentine, but I still would come into town all the time and would visit with this aunt. She was the one that would take me down to the theater on the streetcar. So I remember the streetcars well in Fresno, and I also remember when they tore them up to do away with them and put in bus service. And guess what? This is World War II related. Much of the railroad tracks from the streetcars was taken and shipped to Japan, which we understood later was made into munitions for their effort in their war. So not everything was, 100% like we would like it to have been. But when we think about the fact that our Fresno streetcar tracks were maybe shot back at us, in the form of bullets or even manufactured into guns.
Boy, see, that's a kind of example I'm talking about when I mention us being educated. Who would think that could happen? That's a story I haven't heard before. Let's talk about your story and your family's story. You had an older brother, and while you're still in high school, before America has entered World War II, he joined the Navy?
Yeah, he was in the Naval Reserve, and I remember out on our front lawn, he used to practice signal. He became a signalman, and he had to know all about Morse code, as well as the flag signals, as well as the flash semaphore, I think they call it, signals, where they can flash their messages from one boat to another. And Bruce became very proficient at that. I was still in the school. And so when he was doing 3 years of Naval Reserve, and you have to do 1 year of that time in the actual Navy. Well, he was stationed down in San Diego, as most or a lot of sailors were, and it was while he was up here on Fresno on leave, and he was not supposed to be more than 100 miles out of base, that Pearl Harbor was bombed. And so we got word of that, and instantly my folks jumped in the car, and me too with Bruce, went over to Chandler Field. There was no Hammer Field at that time. It was Chandler Field out there on Kearny Boulevard, and got him on a plane. I think they had to bounce someone off the plane to get Bruce on him, to get him back down to San Diego so he wouldn't be marked absent without leave. He had entered the war from that early point on a minesweeper, and finished his career on that minesweeper. Well, not finished his career, but got ground duty after, because he was such a, had more points than most other sailors. And lo and behold, his minesweeper, the Hovey, went back out again in the Pacific, because that's where he operated in the Pacific, and was sunk. While he was on that minesweeper in the Pacific, the Sullivan brothers, there were five of them, which were quite famous in World War II. Two of the Sullivan brothers were on board his minesweeper ship. Well, they were five brothers in the Navy, and they petitioned some entity of our government to get together all of them on the same ship. Well, they were against that. The government was against that because they didn't want a catastrophe where the parents would lose all of the brothers, but it happened. All of the Sullivan brothers went down together, and Bruce had the privilege of knowing two of them, and it was quite the big newsmaker at the time was the fact that five Sullivan brothers were all lost on what type of ship, I don't remember, but it was probably a destroyer. I don't think it was a carrier, but I don't, it's not important. The important thing is that they were all five lost, and made big headlines here stateside.
Yeah, that was November 13th, 1942. It was a light cruiser, the USS Juno, sunk in the naval battle of Guadalcanal. 687 men died, including those five Sullivan brothers, Albert, Francis, George, Joseph, and Madison. It sounds like Bruce could have been lost too without the timing of him getting off the ship. And let's talk about your own experience, and even going back to December 7th. I can see why it's impossible to forget that day with all the events with your brother home and having to rush him back to the airport and all of that. Did you hear about it on the radio? How did you find out that Pearl Harbor had been attacked?
I guess that it must have come over on the radio. Obviously, even at that point, that we didn't have any television, for that matter. I don't think anybody did. So it would have had to have been that way that we heard it somehow on the radio. I don't think a neighbor come over hollering or something, Pearl Harbor has been bombed. No, there was nothing like that. We got word of it and realized that Bruce had to get back there. He has kept a diary of all of his activities on board the ship, and it really reads fine. I wish that other Navy people might contact me, because I would be happy to loan it to him, because it is so well written. How should I say, he was somewhat of a genius. When he got out of high school at the age of 15 at Fresno High, most of us are 17 or 18 when we graduate from high school. Not Bruce, he was 15, because he skipped two grades in grammar school. The guy was somewhat of a brain. And where this guy you're speaking to right now, or listening to right now, was not that way. I was just happy to be who I am and enjoy my life as a student, and enjoyed the Fresno High and the Warriors, and I really enjoyed that time. I don't think I missed a day of school. As kids now, they think it's a great thing to ditch. Well, it didn't even occur to me to ditch school. I was having too damn much fun there.
And I guess this was your senior year in high school when Pearl Harbor was bombed?
Yeah, it would have been the senior year. And so I thought, well, after I graduated then in June of 42, I thought, well, it's going to be just a matter of a week or two or whatever till they draft me. But I didn't turn 18 until July, even though I guess I was registered at that point. Well, I went to work for Beacon's Van and Storage at 301 South Van Ness Avenue. My father was the Sunmade superintendent of the receiving side of Sunmade. Many of the old timers in Fresno are mostly all gone now, but they would know Charlie Comer, my father. A lot of them at one point or a time had worked underneath him, especially those college students on seasonal, when they needed a seasonal work during the summer vacation, they worked at Sunmade because that was the big plant here in Fresno. I worked at Sunmade for about 3 or 4 days, and one of the old timers out there said, "Hey, kid," he said, "they're hiring down at Beacon's." And so that night, riding home with my father, I didn't have a car. He said, "Oh, I know old man, Mr. Bill Holmes, who was the manager of Beacon's for years. Let's stop. And we put my name in at the counter there in Beacons 301 South Van Ness. And the next night we came home from Sunmaid. My mother said, they want you at Beacons in the morning. I thought, well, that's neat. So he dropped me off there. And that's when I started. I still hadn't even turned 18 yet when I started at Beacons. But I was tough enough that I could hold up my end with all of the old timers down there that lifted their pianos and anything you could have in an office or in a home. We moved it all. And I eventually, of course, did that on my own when I had my own business, which was called Courtesy Moving Service here in Fresno. And I've since sold that way back in 1985 and have been retired ever since. So I'm probably the senior most moving man in Fresno.
And what'd you just do a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I just moved myself. I moved myself a couple of weeks ago. As Paul says, trust me, it's been the toughest move I've had because of my own particular condition. As you can tell, I'm short-winded and I have to catch my breath as I speak. But there wasn't anything that I couldn't move or didn't move. I could even put a grand piano up in the truck all by myself, just knowing how to break it down and turn it on its side and dolly it up there and strap it to the truck so that it didn't get away. So I've done it all.
So you're doing that, but World War II would interrupt your moving career because they had to move you out of Fresno and stick a uniform on you. How did it happen that you ended up in the Army?
They did draft me, and a busload of us went down to somewhere on Broadway or 8th Street, and we were all transported then to the Presidio of Monterey, a very nice old facility, and that's where we got our uniforms, our toothbrushes, and our shaving gear, and got outfitted and learned to do a few right turns and left turns and about faces as we got oriented into the Army. It was strictly basic training. It wasn't anything combat-oriented, just learning to be a soldier and take orders without question. So eventually then I left Presidio of Monterey and was sent down to San Diego to Camp Callan, which was opposite Pendleton Marine Base. That camp was a anti-aircraft 40 millimeter and also 90 millimeters. Well, I was assigned to the 40 millimeter group, anti-aircraft, and learned to identify planes that are approaching. And the reason I got into the anti-aircraft was, and they're doing the examinations on us, they found out that I had what is called or known as stereoscopic vision. That means I can determine an object away from me, which if there are two objects coming toward me, which one is the closest? Well, I guess they figured that's important because you got to shoot the plane down that is nearest you first. And so that's what got me into the anti-aircraft. And I was doing just fine there. And we went out on what is called the Borrego Desert out east of San Diego and L.A. and did maneuvers out there and dug in and fired our 40 millimeters. That anti-aircraft period of time was interesting. In fact, while we were there, not out on the desert, but back in across the street from Pendleton, they used to tow out over the ocean a long sleeve that we were to fire at to practice firing so that you'd know how to lead a plane to make the hit. Well, some dumb GIs are so damn dumb, they fired at the plane instead of the trailing sleeve. And those people, I found out those pilots in there were pilots that had washed out, and it was the best kind of assignment they gave them, and which I guess was a form of punishment to them. So
they didn't shoot the plane down, just gave them a scare, huh?
I've never known of one being shot down, but I suppose it could have happened, but not on my watch. It didn't happen.
Well, it's time for our first break, but there's much more to come with Clay Comer, how he ended up in the infantry, and how he came face to face with the horrors of the Holocaust. Hometown Heroes will continue right after this. Our World War II veterans deserve a chance to see their memorial in Washington, D.C., and you can help send them there simply by renting a car. Between now and the end of October, visit any Enterprise Rent-A-Car location from Bakersfield in the south to Tulare, Visalia, Hanford, Selma, Fresno, Madera, Merced, all the way north to Sacramento. Tell them you heard this ad on Hometown Heroes, and Enterprise will donate 10% of your rental to Central Valley Honor Flight. Restrictions may apply. I'm sure you're familiar with Enterprise, but do you know why the largest car rental company in the U.S. is called Enterprise? The company's founder, Jack Taylor, was a decorated F-6F Hellcat pilot in World War II, flying off the deck of the Big E, the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise. Maybe I should get him on the show sometime and he can tell us how he earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. In the meantime, choose Enterprise for your next rental. Tell him you heard this advertisement on Hometown Heroes, and you'll be helping to send our World War II veterans on one more tour with honor.